All right. If you could make sure you silence your cell phones, I appreciate that. All right. How's everyone doing tonight? All right. If you have your Bibles, please take out your Bibles. And just have it ready. We want to look at a couple passages. All right. So, tonight, I'm going to talk about singleness and marriage. Woo! Woo! You excited? Yeah? Woo. Yeah. Thanks, cuz. Now, it's a big topic, so the message is not meant to be comprehensive. I'm simply going to speak to this church what I feel like the church needs to hear. Now, I am single. If you're single and you know it, let me hear you say, yeah.
Yeah.
If you're serious about relationships, let me hear you say, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right. All right, for those who just said, oh, yeah. All right, I'd just like to recommend two books, all right, because this message is not really going to cover what you really need to know for relationships completely, comprehensively. But this is two good books. They're available at our bookstore. I think they sold out, but we'll get a new order in. One's called Choosing God's Best by Dr. Wanacker. All right, very good book. It's very straightforward. And this is one of my favorites, Should I Get Married by M. Blaine Smith. Okay, another excellent, balanced book. All right. Highly recommend both of these books. Now, with today's divorce rates in the church being so high, we just can't afford to trust our intuition. We need wisdom. So I encourage all of you to read. All right. Now, I've been reluctant to speak on this topic because when a person speaks on relationships, sometimes the girls start thinking that the guy who is speaking is good at relationships. And there's this danger where if a single minister preaches on relationships, he becomes a heartthrob. Well, I've resisted long enough. May God's will be done tonight. Now, tonight, I've chosen to focus on the questions of, am I ready to get married? And what initiative should I take? What initiative can I take? Okay. But before we talk about that, we need to first talk about the more fundamental question of choosing between marriage and singleness. All right? Look at your neighbor and ask yourself, do I want to get married? Does God want me to get married? Do I want to get married? Now, fortunately, the Bible speaks clearly about this issue. All right, so we'll look at that. But before we look at biblical perspectives, it might be helpful by way of contrast to identify unhealthy views toward this topic. Now, a lot of people in the church today, all right, especially Koreans, idealize marriage. Some go as far as thinking it's a universal need. And though no one ever says it outright, there's an underlying assumption in many churches that marriage is a more healthy state than singleness. It's like, hey, happy birthday, Natalie. Happy birthday. How old are you now? 36? Okay. Why isn't she married yet? Something wrong with that girl. You know, there's this underlying assumption that if a person's old and single, there's got to be something wrong with them. Some social problem, hygiene problem, whatever it is. All right? Something's wrong with them. Now, while this creates a comfortable climate for those who want to pursue marriage, it's very discouraging for someone who cannot find a mate or just simply wish to remain single. Take, for example, Linda. Linda is perfectly at peace with being single. She enjoys the freedom of the single life and finds that being unattached opens doors that would otherwise be closed. Okay? Yet friends console her for being without a mate. They read feelings into her that simply aren't there. Hey, don't worry. Don't worry, your time will come. Oh, I'm sorry, Linda. Your time will come. Don't worry. Everyone tells her in subtle or not so subtle ways that she'll be happier and more fulfilled if married. Now, there's no question today that many Christians over-glamorize marriage. People in the church who opt for singleness do so at the cost of being labeled second-class citizens. Others who are well-suited for single life are unfairly pressured toward marriage. Now, on the other extreme, some people idealize singleness as being more virtuous and holy than marriage. Although it is mostly done with balance, some churches and parachurch organizations that emphasize missionary service can imply that a single person is more suited for this missions work and following a higher calling than the one who settles for marriage. Then when a person who has this view does get married, they have this fear that they have compromised the perfect will of God. And still others regard marriage as a prize that is so high that they assume they couldn't possibly be worthy of it. They see marriage as a reward which God gives to those who merit it through an exemplary Christian life. Perhaps they have a sinful past that they feel is just too ungodly to merit God's gift of marriage. So staying single becomes this form of self-punishment to atone for the way that they used to live. Though they long for marriage inside, they may even intentionally sabotage their possibilities and chances because they feel they just don't deserve it. Now, keeping in mind these unhealthy views towards singleness and marriage, let's open up the scriptures. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 1 through 9. And let's start looking at what the Bible says about singleness and marriage. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 1 through 9. All right. I'll read one verse, you guys read the second. All right. Now, for the matters you wrote about, it is good for a man not to marry. Go.
Since there is so much immorality, each man should have his own wife, and to each woman her own husband.
The husband should fulfill his marital duty to his wife, and likewise the wife to her husband.
The wife's body does not belong to her alone, but also to her husband. In the same way, the husband's body does not belong to him alone, but also to his wife.
Do not deprive each other except by mutual consent and for a time so that you may devote yourselves to prayer. Then come together again so that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control.
I say this as a concession, not as a command.
I wish that all men were as I am, but each man has his own gift from God. One has this gift, another has that.
Now to the unmarried and the widows I say, it is good for them to stay married as I am.
But if they cannot control themselves, they should marry, for it is better to marry than to burn with passion. Oh, this giggles. The Bible tells us that God gives us marriage not because we deserve it, but because we need it. You saw this passage. It says, the husband should fulfill his marital duty to his wife, and likewise the wife to her husband. What's Paul talking about there? What is he talking about? What marital duties? You know? Thank you, brother. That's exactly right. Sexual duties. Yeah, it's sex. He's talking about sex. All right, and Paul's he doesn't pull the punches. He points out that people get married not only because they want to start a family and have companionship, but because they want to have sex. No way. Yep, that's exactly one of the reasons why your parents also got married. Sorry about that. But now, come on. If sex had nothing to do with it, you'd just simply stay friends. All right? Now, there's nothing wrong with admitting this. One of the biggest reasons people get married is to enjoy sex. Sex is not dirty when enjoyed in the covenant of marriage. Sex is wonderful. Sex is beautiful. Now, in this chapter, Paul says that it is good not to marry. Three times. Chapter 7, verse 1, 8, and 26. He says, it is good not to marry. He says that three times. It's good not to marry. It's good not to marry. Yet he says in verse 9 that if a person cannot control themselves, it is better to marry than to burn with passion. Paul is focusing on sex, not because marriage is all about sex, but to point out that God uses marriage as a provision to meet our sexual need. In other words, God gives us marriage not because we deserve it, but because we need it. Marriage is a gift. He gives it to meet our needs. Look at verse 7. Paul says, I wish that all men were as I am, but each man has his own gift from God. One has this gift, another has that. Marriage, brothers and sisters, is a gift. Proverbs 19:14, houses and wealth are inherited from parents, but a prudent wife is from a mail order bride agency? No. Is from a bar? No. It's from the Lord. A prudent wife is a gift. Marriage is a gift. Okay? He gives marriage to meet our need for sex, companionship, and other things as well, but for sex. All right? There's nothing wrong to admit that. Now, if the Bible says it is better to be married than to burn with passion, doesn't that mean that marriage is simply better? Remember Genesis where God said, it is not good for man to be alone? Doesn't that mean that singleness is bad? Right? God says, it is not good for Adam to be alone. Doesn't that just automatically mean the converse is true, that God thinks singleness is bad? Doesn't that mean singleness is bad? Let's look at verse 38 in the same chapter. Actually, is it chapter 8 or chapter 7? Verse 38 of chapter 7. All right, it says, so then, he who marries the virgin does right, but he who does not marry her does even better. Here it seems to say singleness is better. So what is it? Which is better? Marriage or singleness? Singleness or marriage? Which is better? If you look at the paragraph before in verse 32 to 35, that whole paragraph, Paul describes all the benefits of an undivided single life. And you got to admit, an unmarried person can serve God in ways that a married person can't. Paul repeats over and over that if you've never been married, it is good to stay unmarried. If you've been widowed, it's good to remain single. And referring back to Genesis passage where God said, it is not good for man to be alone. Well, I personally think, you know, this is a little different today. All right? Because not only was Adam single, he was just straight up alone. Right? But that's not our case for today. Like, we're surrounded by people and brothers and sisters in the church. And we may feel lonely, but we're not alone like Adam was. Right? Well, to shed more light on singleness, let's look at what Jesus had to say. Matthew chapter 19. Okay? Matthew chapter 19, verses 3 to 12. I'll read reading verse 3, if you guys could interchange. Some Pharisees came to him to test him. They asked, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any and every reason?
Haven't you read, he replied, that at the beginning the Creator made them male and female?
And said, for this reason a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh.
So they are no longer two, but one. Therefore, what God has joined together, let man not separate.
Why then, they asked, did Moses command that a man give his wife a certificate of divorce and send her away? I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife, except for marital unfaithfulness, and marries another woman, commits adultery.
But the disciples said to him, if this is the situation between a husband and wife, it is better not to marry.
Jesus replied, not everyone can accept this word, but only those to whom it has been given.
For some are eunuchs because they were born that way. Others were made that way by men, and others have renounced marriage because of the kingdom of heaven.
The one who can accept this should accept it. Now, during this time, it's interesting, divorce was quite rampant. And people were divorcing their wives for all kinds of reasons. They have legal records where men divorced their wives for things like poor cooking. Like, a woman just cooked up a really bad meal. And they would actually list that as one of the reasons for divorce. All right, so you got to think, it's a very patriarchal, very man, you know, geared society they're living in here. And so Jesus comes at them straight and says that a man must never divorce his wife for any reason, except for marital unfaithfulness. But for any reason, you are not to divorce her for her gaining weight, for her cooking a bad meal, whatever the reason, you are not to divorce your wife. So in a moment of like this locker room manly humor, right, the disciples say to him, well, that's the situation, Jesus. It's just better not to marry. Ha, ha, ha. Ha, ha, Jesus. Okay. But Jesus doesn't find it funny. He takes the phrase, it is better not to marry, and then says in verse 11, not everyone can accept this word, but only to those whom it has been given. Now, what's Jesus saying here? Just like marriage, Jesus is saying that singleness is also a gift. It's a gift. A gift to be celebrated. As much as marriage is celebrated, singleness ought to be celebrated. It's a gift from God. And by the words of Jesus, singleness is not a gift given to everyone, but a gift given to some. All right, so, whew. All right, for some of the guys, all right, just take a breather there. All right, it's only given to some. All right, it's not given to everyone. All right, it's only given to some. Just the way he words this, you can tell that, you know, many people don't have this gift, but some do get it. And Jesus says, the one who can accept this should accept it. If you can accept this word, and you think God has given you the gift of singleness, look, it's better for you not to marry. In this age where divorce, where marriages last only a few weeks, you know, it's good not to marry. You would do better to stay single and be married to Jesus than to marry the wrong person and get divorced. There's nothing wrong with someone who does not marry. Turn to your neighbor and tell him that. There's nothing wrong with someone who does not marry. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. Get in there, church. Get it in there. Now, Paul had this gift. He couldn't have done all that he did if he was married. Think about it. All right? He was on the run all the time. He spent a lot of time in jail. His wife would have never seen him. She would have just been worried, sick about him, just causing a lot of stress and ulcers. I mean, it just wouldn't have been a very pleasing sight. Okay? He wouldn't have been able to do all the things God called him to do had he been married. But you know, the funny thing is, if the Apostle Paul were sitting here today, we'd probably crack old jokes at him and ask him what's taking him for so long to be married. We probably do that. Because that's the culture that our church is seeped in today. Church, let's stop that. Let us be sensitive and create an environment where we honor those who have this gift. Where we honor those who have this gift. Not scoff at them, not be condescending, not accuse them of having some kind of character defect or social problem, but to honor them. Because there are not that many of them. And they ought to be encouraged and welcomed. According to the Bible, there is no basis for regarding either marriage or singleness as being better than the other. Both are gifts from God. It's not a question of what's better, but rather what is best, what is God's gift for a specific individual. When the biblical perspective on marriage and singleness is fully understood, it's both balanced and liberating. What we find is that surprisingly, our preferences are key to discovering God's answer to the whole marriage question. So, ask yourself again, do I want to get married? Do I want to get married? Yeah. If you want to enter the covenant of marriage, you should feel free to stay open to the possibility. You don't have to trouble yourself with thoughts like, what if God really wants me to just stay single? The final proof that God wants you married will be in His making it possible. Now, it would be wrong to think that your desire for marriage is a prophetic indication that God will definitely provide you with a mate. But it is also wrong to think that He might be expecting you to plan to stay single forever just because it hasn't happened yet. If you got the desire, you ought to feel free to stay open and hopeful, no matter what your age. Because great marriages can begin at any age. Some people get widowed later in their life, and they find great marriages still. If, on the other hand, you prefer to stay single, then you don't have to trouble yourself with the thought of, what if God really wants me to be married? Nor do you have to think of yourself as a second-class citizen. Enjoy the extraordinary gift of singleness God has given you, and look to serve in the unique ways that it affords. And then tell your friends to get off your back. If you're not sure, don't worry about it. That's what I say. Don't let the pressure of relatives weigh you down. Go at your own pace. All right, I know that your parents have their own timing and schedule for you to be married. Okay? As much as you want to honor them, All right, when it comes down to it, you're the one who's going to live with it, with that spouse. All right. Go at your own pace. Let the Spirit of God move in your life. Now, at this point, I do want to pause and point out that there are some people who are not sure or who may want to remain single, not because they have the gift of singleness, but because of various issues that need to be dealt with first. Some have been hurt, and they need to be healed from past dating relationships and other wounds before they can clearly hear God's voice regarding singleness and marriage. For some, they have commitment issues, all right, and those need to be properly dealt with. For others, it's lust. No, you hear a lot of guys say this. I can't see myself with just one person. I must continue to keep my options open so that I can continue to feed my lust problem. Boy, you need deliverance. That's what you need. For people who are dealing with these kinds of issues, the issue is not one of discernment, but rather it's one of discipleship, deliverance, and healing before you can clearly discern God's call for singleness and marriage in your life. Now, for those who have an affirmation that they want to get married, the next question you want to ask yourself is, am I ready to get married? Am I eligible? Am I on the market? Scratch that last part. All right, am I ready to get married? To answer this question, you need to evaluate what season you are in. I'll tell you right now, people who prematurely enter marriage, all right, in the wrong season, it's like picking a fruit off the tree, like picking a fruit off the tree before it's ripe. You can't put it back. All right, it's just sour, and you just got to deal with what you got, right? All right, and you got to evaluate what season you are in. Pastor Joel Stockstill from a ministry called 220 Power provides three aspects to help you determine if the season you are in is one where you are ready to get married or not. Okay, one aspect, first aspect is salvation. How long have you been saved? Now, there's no time minimum, but have you been delivered from lust, perversion, carnality, worldly ways? Have you been delivered from that? Are you able to submit to Christ's authority? Are you able to submit to the spiritual leadership of the church? Because look, if you can't submit to Christ's authority and you can't submit to the leadership of the church, how the heck do you expect for you to submit to your spouse? How long have you been consistently walking in the ways and will of the Lord? Brothers and sisters, if you haven't learned to nurture your relationship with God, you ain't ready. You are not ready to begin a relationship with someone else. Okay? Your salvation. Check your season. Second is education. If you're in college, and we have some college students in here, woohoo, Joe, yeah, go, Jojo. You need to ask yourself, how long is it going to be until I can really commit to a marriage-minded relationship? And you just got to be real with yourself. All right, and having worked as a staff with Campus Crusade, I don't believe in the whole, oh, we're going to date for 4 years and then graduate and get married. For those who've said that, almost every one of those relationships have ended up in fornication, sexual sin. Good intentions, all right? Let's just be real here, all right? Let's just be real, okay? Because that's exactly what happens. No matter whether you're a Christian, you know, youth group president, or you are the leader of your campus group, all right? This is what happens. There is no reason why you should date somebody for 3+ years. Guys, if you can't commit now, then you shouldn't be dating now. All right, let me just make it real plain. If you can't commit now, you should not be dating her now. Long-term dating, I'm convinced, is a setup by Satan to hinder your spiritual growth and to make you fall into sexual sin. Brothers and sisters, we got to stop fooling ourselves. Sometimes it's best to just break up. Be friends from afar. And when you get into a season where you're making money and you're ready, then you go look for her. Well, what if she marries someone else in the meantime? All right, then let her. Then let her. Check your season, your education. Are you ready? Are you able? Have you been established to make those kinds of marriage-minded commitments? Third, finances. As a man, am I in a position as a man to support a family? Women, ask yourself, have I incurred a tremendous amount of debt? If you have $5,000 to $10,000 in credit card debt, you are not ready to get married. Okay, I can understand college loans, all right? College loans are a lower rate. All right, everybody's got college loans these days. All right, but you got no excuse for your credit cards. All right, credit cards are like four times the amount of interest. All right, I'm a married rich guy. Yeah, go ahead. All right, don't be surprised if he says prenup. I don't know. Brothers too. If you got debt, you need to make sacrifices and work on paying it off. All right, you need to make sacrifices. You know, I personally, this is a testimony of mine. All right, during my years at NYU, I accumulated a lot of credit card debt. At one point, I had six credit cards, and I was just making transfers between transfers, and I had to just keep track of when the 0% APR was expiring so that I can transfer it again. You know, I'd be like, ha ha, you never get me. But in the meantime, that debt just accrued like to five figures and well into the five figures. All right, you're talking like close to $15,000. All right, some of that was a lot of books, and I sometimes put tuition on that as well because, you know, my family had a hard time. But still, I had accrued this debt, all right? And from 2001, when I graduated, until 2005, when I came to Korea, during those 4 years, all right, I made sacrifices to make sure that my credit card debt was paid off, okay? During those 4 years, all right, it's weird because today I'm like buying like clothes for myself. And it's so new. It's such a new thing for me. And I realized that I haven't bought clothes for myself in like 5-6 years, you know? Because these sacrifices I was making, you know, I really didn't buy anything past the essentials. All right? But now, you know, my clothes are getting like, you know, they're just falling apart, you know? They're just getting discolored and it's nasty. I mean, we need to replace those old yellow shirts that used to be white shirts, right? But I made the sacrifices, and you know what? Those sacrifices, like sacrificing lunch here and not buying things there, right? They didn't actually accumulate to pay off all the debt. But what happened was, I think God honored my moves of faith toward getting debt free. And then through certain supporters, He helped me to pay it all off in those 4 years. So then now I'm at zero. Hallelujah, I'm at zero. All right, you want to see somebody getting ready? All right. All right, ask yourself, all right, how well do I manage money? All right, don't tell me how much you're going to make. Tell me how you've handled the money that you've come across thus far. All right. Are you in a financial season to get married? If you're not, you're not ready. Just be real, you're not ready. Not only do you have to evaluate your season, but you also gotta ask the central question: what is my identity? All right, Brothers, what is my identity? For men, they must know who they are and where they are going before they attempt to have a woman follow with them. Doesn't that just make sense? Doesn't that just make sense? For women, you better check out his plans and ambitions and decide if this is something you want to invest in with your life. Because that's what we're talking about. If the man you're interested in hasn't figured out who he is and what he wants to do, don't marry him. Because you are gambling with your future. You have no idea where you're going to go and what you're going to have to do. And for the men, we got to understand that the number one thing that women want is security. Okay, you know why? Because the woman is the nurturer. She's got to take care of the family. And how can you take care of a family when you don't have security? If the man can't provide security, that man's not a man. It's not your looks, it's not your charm, it's not whether you're fashionable, it's security. Can you provide? Are you stable? Do you know what you're doing? And you know what? The father of the girl that you're interested in will also ask you about security. If a man doesn't know his identity and purpose, the man will not give you security. Is he moving toward or in an occupation that will provide for you and a family? A girl might be like, oh, well, I'll help him. I'll get a job and establish some security. Well, look, what if you get pregnant on your honeymoon? What's going to happen then? For 9 months, you can't work. You accrue all this debt, all right? And later on, the stress and strains from that debt, it leads you guys toward divorce. Remember, the woman takes on the man's identity, right? What did you do as a kid when you had a crush on a guy? Right? You will write your name, and then you will write his last name next to it. Mina George. Or whatever crush you have, Mina. You know, you did that. You're like, and then you put a heart around it, you know? Why? Because it's the woman who takes on the man's identity. So the woman must realize that whatever his identity is, that's going to be yours. And if he doesn't know what his identity is, how confused are you going to be about your identity? Well, he's just not sure about himself right now. Well, give him some time. He's got a lot of great ideas. Well, let him come down the development road a little bit more. Men, if you don't know your identity and purpose, straight up, you are not ready. You are not ready. Now, there are a lot of other ways in which we can determine your readiness. Like, have you dealt with your family history? How much experience have you each had living independently? If you feel compelled to go on living with your parents, you're definitely not ready for marriage. I'm sorry. All right? This is the truth. All right? Even if you don't live with your parents, but you find it difficult to say no, or you are easily swayed by their wishes, which go against your better judgment, you don't own your life adequately to give of yourself in marriage. Marriage is for better, for worse, for keeps, and you need to honestly assess your readiness before you consider the prospects. Now, let's say you do determine that you're ready. And you're like, God, I'm in the season. I'm ready. I'm ready to go. Okay? God may still not marry you off right away. Just because you're ready does not mean that it's going to happen right away. Right? It would definitely help toward that. Okay? But sometimes God may bring you through a season where there's really no prospects around you. All right? To teach you about, you know, different things about righteousness, about his word, and about faith. But let's move on. Once you've determined that you want to get married and that you are ready to get married, then you're ready to ask yourself, how do I discern who he or she is? This question should not be asked until the first two questions are successfully navigated. Now, I'm a firm believer that God has a sovereign plan and chooses a mate for those who pursue his perfect plan and will for their lives. Perhaps it's my Presbyterian background that has influenced me, but I will go as far as to say that God predestines people to be married. You know, you are my destiny. Yeah, I believe that. But when it comes to teaching the church about relationships, this view must be shared with sensitivity. Why? Because it's not very helpful for most people. For example, what if a couple announces to the world at their wedding that God had predestined them to be wed, and then three, four years later they divorce? The disillusionment can be quite damaging for those who don't understand that whether God predestined them or not, we have an enemy that's working 24/7 to break up marriages, especially the ones that God has brought together. All right? So in some ways, you know, it's not good to just be like, oh, yeah, God predestined me for a woman, and I just can't wait till she comes along. All right. And even if that is your view and that is true, this does not mean that we can go into autopilot and wait for Prince Charming to just kind of fall into our lap, right? God requires faith, initiative, and discernment in order for you to wed God's chosen best. And in order to discern who that person is, there are some helpful principles to keep in mind. I can't go through all of them. I'm just going to try to go through some of them. Right now, go. All right? Let me start by saying that God does not will that you date or marry an unbeliever. Okay? The whole flirt to convert principle is not found in the Bible. Okay? Instead, the scriptures say, 2 Corinthians 6:14, do not be yoked together with unbelievers. For what do righteousness and wickedness have in common? Or what fellowship can light have with darkness? If you're dating a non-believer, let me just make it real plain to you. You need to break it off right away. When a Christian dates a non-believer, that's usually indicative of intense carnality in their life. They're just immature in their faith. They might hold leadership positions, but look, if they're doing that, it's indicative of immaturity. But she's willing to come to church. Nope. Until she truly gives her life to the Lord, you have no business dating her. 1 Corinthians 7:39 said, right? Her husband must be a believer. Spouse must be a believer. Now, this also needs to be applied to brand new believers. I have never seen a healthy relationship come out of a person who dated a brand new believer. Oh, Cindy's so pretty. Man, but she's a pagan. Man, she's just always like, you know, doing drugs and just like all up in those parties with those guys. I don't know what she'd be doing. But Cindy sure is pretty. Yeah. And then one day Cindy comes to a retreat. Oh, Cindy, Cindy got saved, yo. Oh, snap, yeah, it's game time, boy, yeah. Yo, what's up, Cindy? You want to pray together? You want to go to prayer meeting together? All right, nah, please, nah. It's not, don't work like that. I've never seen a healthy relationship come out of a person who dated a brand new believer. If you really love him or her, you need to give that person the space to enter a season of growth and devotion in the Lord. You don't even know if that person is going to backslide after a few months. But he or she might date somebody else. Let them date somebody else. You let them. It wasn't meant to be. Deal with it. What we need to do is you need to fear what God is doing in that person's life. And when you start interfering because of your own selfish pleasures, all right, you're bringing on both sin for that person and sin for yourself. Jesus says, better for a millstone to be tied around a person's neck than for him to cause any of these little ones to sin. Well, what is a new believer? a new believer is like a little baby. Yo, Cindy, what's up, girl? Let's go to prayer meeting. All right, that's a yes. Let's go. I mean, we need to tie a millstone around your neck. All right, woe to those through whom sin comes. You need to fear what God's doing in that person's life. All right? All right, so we ought to never, all right, God does not will that you date or marry an unbeliever, and you need to stay good distance from new believers as well. Give them the space they need to grow. Respect, fear what God's doing in their life. Now that we've made that clear, let's talk about how to discern who he or she is. My first suggestion is very practical. Okay, I heard this in many retreats and seen it in books. All right? You do it when you go shopping in the grocery store. You make a list. Make a list. Ah, that's so superficial. I can't. What would I put on my list? You know, he's a Christian. He's got to love God. I don't know where else I go from that. Well, put something like he's got to be tall. Oh, that's so superficial. I can't do that. Make a list. All right, make a list. Identify what qualities you want, because you do have desires, brothers and sisters. Then you got to pray over it. The list is not a law written in stone, but it will help you to identify those qualities and aspects of a person that you desire, those that you cannot tolerate, and those that are not just not a big deal to you. You know? Like, his feet stink. All right, maybe that's not a big deal for you. That's not on your list then. But for some other people, it's like, feet cannot stink. All right, it's right there. It's just cannot be compromised for some. Okay, it can be seemingly shallow, all right, like hygiene, hair, height. That's shallow. Anyway, yeah, the list can contain those kinds of things. All right, or it might be other things like education level, intellect. All right. Intellectual compatibility, very important, all right? Language proficiency, especially for Korean Americans, very important, all right? If my wife is like, oh, 안녕하십니까? I'm like, nah, that's not gonna happen. Do I need to get a translator for you? build that up, you know, sometimes. But if that's you, you might wanna put that on your list. Income level, all right? If you feel like there is a comfortable level, all right, of income that you need to live with and you can't do without, all right, don't just be honest with yourself. Put it down. It don't mean God's going to diss you. You shallow. Psh, why are you always just thinking about money and income? No, God's not going to do that. He knows. He's the one who brought you up. He's the one who surrounded you with that wealth. All right, if that's something you can't do without, put it on your list and pray over it. When a person goes shopping for a car or a computer, some kind of big purchase, they often weigh all the qualities of the product before they make a decision, because there's a big price at stake. Well, why wouldn't you do the same for choosing a life partner? It's more important than a car. Make a list. Okay, identify those things that you have inside you that you want in a future spouse. Because God will use those things to direct you, help you identify who that person is. All right? Second, if you find a person that fits the qualities you're looking for, watch how that person treats the bride of Christ. This is something interesting that I heard recently. A man's commitment to the local church is a good indication of how he'll honor his commitment to marriage. Ladies, if a good-looking Daniel Henney-looking man comes along, and he's great all around, but he has a history of bouncing around churches, don't date him. He doesn't know what commitment is. If he's dating around churches like that, who's to say he's not going to do the same thing with you? He might marry you, but once he sees something better come along, he might just step out. Brothers, if there's a sister that is at church who comes in and week out, but she never serves, and she never gives a dime. Guess what? She's what I call a Gongju gold digger. A spoiled little brat, a Gongju gold digger. All right? Because her life is all about getting and not about giving. Stay away from her. Remember Al Bundy from Married with Children? That's going to be you if you marry a girl like that. Okay? She could be at church every week. All right? But if she's not giving nothing, she's not serving, she's not involved, probably good indication of how she's going to treat you. I'm here to grow and improve my spirituality, but I'm going to leave those silly things like serving for others to do. That's Gongju. That's gold digger written all over it, all right? Just stay away, stay away. And brothers and sisters, before we even evaluate how others treat the bride of Christ, let's point the finger at ourselves first. What will others say your pattern has been? How have you been treating the bride of Christ? And if it ain't looking so good, get connected to your church. Start to serve. You know, there's a war out there. You know, some of our prayer team members were involved with deliverance ministry. It's a real war between the spiritual forces of evil and the angels of God for the souls of men. There's a real war going on out there. But for many singles in the church today, we're like King David. In 2 Samuel 11, verse 1 and 2, it says that at the time when kings go off to war, David remained in Jerusalem. And it was only a matter of time when one night he saw Bathsheba and got into a world of trouble and evil. But a lot of singles in the church today are the same way. There's a war going on around us, but they do nothing. They come out to church not knowing what they're supposed to do, not knowing their role, ignoring their call. You know what they do? They just come out to see who's available. The church is at war. Brothers and sisters, we need to put on our gear and start serving, start discovering God's role for you in the local church, in His kingdom, in His missions work. Discover that. Now, if you find somebody who matches your list, and he or she also has a track of proven faithfulness in the church, the next thing you need to do, all right, is stop talking about that person to your friends. Stop talking about that person to your friends. And start talking to God about him or her. Okay? Very important step. In other words, you got to pray. Prayer is the only way you can be certain that you are not being driven by infatuation. Brothers and sisters, today, the infatuation bug is everywhere. It's like a virus, just infected so many people. Infatuation. It is a serious, it's like a disease. It makes people like lose sleep. They don't eat. They get depressed over people that they never even dated, over people that they may not even, you know, they never even met personally, but because they're so infatuated, the crushes are so strong, you know. You know, the more you gossip, the more you talk about that person to your friends, the more you fantasize, write out his last name with your first name, listen to ballads, the more you watch Korean dramas, all right? The more you feed the infatuation fire. And when an infatuation grows too big, you can't make good decisions. You become blinded from seeing things clearly and hearing the voice of God. When I was a freshman at NYU, one of my Campus Crusade staff workers, Chong-A Park, she once said, because she knew that I had a crush on this girl named Jenny, and She said, there's nothing wrong with having feelings, Christian. Don't feel guilty that you have feelings for her. It's what you do with those feelings that matter. Because you know what I was doing with Jenny, my freshman year? Jenny Park. Okay. J-E-N-N-I-E. Jenny Park. Whoa, I'm spelling that. Oh, sorry, Jenny. All right, I don't know if Jenny's going to listen to this, but anyway. Yeah, I had a crush. I let a lot of people know. All right, Jenny, I had a crush on Jenny, my freshman at NYU. All right. And my infatuation for her was strong. All right. I liked her like from the beginning, and I had a crush on her for 8 months without having her have any clue that I even liked her. She had no idea. I liked her for 8 months. You know, I was just feeding that infatuation fire. I would talk to people about how wonderful she is. You know, did you spend time with her? No, but man, you know, I saw her writing her email. And man, that girl, man, she writes her email so beautifully. And you know, and one time we did for after school was over, we went to some carnival, and like there was like all these like big black dudes with guns in their waist, and they were like busting into the line. They're just like, "Yo, your homie," and then they just like bust into line. You know, they show off their guns and stuff. I didn't get scared of them, you know. So like, you know, they were doing that to people around us, but I was trying to be all tough in front of Jenny, right? And then like this like crowd of people got in between us, and I remember like I reached out my hand through the crowd like this, and I was like Jenny, where are you? You know, and all of a sudden, Jenny held my hand. There was like this electricity that just went through. I was like, yeah, I knew it. Anyway, this infatuation with Jenny, it got so bad that we actually were on the same missions team to Kazakhstan, and it was just getting to be a real distraction. And I knew that I had to cut it off. I needed to stop. I had to change the way I was dealing with my feelings for her. I had to stop thinking about her and fantasizing about, you know, marriage and all these things, you know. And so I actually had a long piece of bangs for my freshman year. I had these long bangs, you know, that came down to like my chest area. It was like really long. And as like a symbolic act of covenant, I was like, Lord, you are more important to me than any girl. And I shall lay down these feelings, Lord. And this is the way I'm going to symbolize it. Snip. And I cut my hair. And then I paste it into my journal. And then I show people. And they said, that is nasty. But as I was doing that, what ended up, man, my infatuation was just so, it just so blinded me. What happened was, toward the end of the trip, what I didn't know was she had her own infatuation. And that's why it kind of blinded her from seeing the kind of clues I was trying to leave, you know? And one time we were on this, like, in the river in Astana, and we were on this, like boat where you use the pedals, you know? But it doesn't move, really. But you, like, kicking. And she was, like, on one side, I was the other, and then another sister was in the middle. And then, like, she knew that I had a crush on somebody. And she was like, who is it? I want to know. Is it Agnes? Is it Tammy? Is it Dawn? Who is it? And I was like, I'm not going to tell you. And we got on the boat. We were, like, paddling. And then she just kept looking over at me, not saying a word. And I was just thinking, Lord, I've laid down these feelings. Lord, what is going on now? Does she really have feelings for me back or what? What? Why is she looking at me like that, Lord? Why is she looking at me? She's looking at me. And then when we're doing prayer meeting, like everybody had their eyes closed and I had my eyes closed. And then I just wanted to get a glance at Jenny. So I looked up at Jenny. and then I look up and this is Jenny. And all she wanted to know who my crush was. It wasn't that she had feelings for me. She just had a really weird, twisted way of trying to get it out of me. But all those stares, it threw me all off. I was like, by the end of the trip, I was like, ah! So I was like, Lord, I have to know. So like, I confronted her and I was like, Jenny, I don't know how you feel, but here, just listen to me out. I got all these feelings for you. I've had feelings for you for 8 months, and I just, Yeah. And she didn't say much words. And I thought that was like her way of saying, yeah, I like you back. You know, she was just silent. And then later on, we're in Korea, and there. Oh, I got to tell you this story. We went to this one restaurant somewhere in Seoul. I didn't know Seoul that well. It was like my first time back in like 4 years. We're in Seoul, and then we were at some restaurant, and then I had told my friend, another friend, who she had a crush on me really bad. But, you know, because of Jenny, I couldn't see any of these other girls who liked me. And I actually asked that girl who had a crush on me to give a gift to Jenny. And I little did I know that that's just a very insensitive thing to do. Butters, do not ever do that, all right? And, yeah, give us some time. Don't do that. Don't do that. And, yeah, and she ended up giving the gift to Jenny, and then Jenny got the gift. And then and then that night, I just couldn't stand to be there at the dinner. So, like, I started running out, and I just started running down the street. And I remember it just started pouring rain all of a sudden. And I was like, yeah, Korean drama, baby. I'm living it. I'm living it. And I heard like Korean drama songs playing in the background. And then I just run it. And then I stopped. And I was like. But Jenny wasn't there. All right? Ain't nobody there since. So I just, she was like wiggling. And I just ran through that rain. And then finally I got to the airport. It was time to leave for New York. And then I get like this bag from Jenny through another friend. And that friend's like, oh yeah, Jenny wanted to give you this. I was like, oh yeah. So I'm like, yeah, she got me some gifts too. Yeah, boy. And I made her like an audio cassette tape of like all these, a mix of ballads. And I also have put my voice on it. Don't ever do that, guys. Yeah, it's so cheesy because I still listen to that thing. I don't know what I was thinking. But anyway, I gave her that tape. I don't even know if she listened to it. I hope not. But but like, yeah, I get on the plane. I was like so eager to open it up. And finally, I get on the plane. I open that joint up. Guess what it was? It was the gifts that I had given her. And she put a note in there. She was like, pretty much, like she dropped it. And that's the way I like it. She dropped it and she was like, you know what? I'm sorry. But the way you feel about me is the way I feel about somebody else. And then I remember I was sitting next to this ajumma. I was looking at this like little toy clock and I was like, and she was like, you're right. You're okay. I was heartbroken. All right? All over an infatuation, all right? Mind you, that was just going one way the whole time for 8 months. That's how strong infatuations are. Brothers and sisters, don't feed the infatuation fire. That's not love. That's Satan's way to destroy you, to hinder your growth, to make you marry the wrong person. Take a month or two to pray. And if the feelings are still there, then brothers, you must decide whether to make a move. All right, let's just be plain tonight. You need to make a move, especially a lot of you who are older. All right, if you pray about it, all right, and you realize clearly that she is someone that you would like to pursue and see where it goes up, then stop being cowardly and ask her out on a date. Sisters, if all these things are matching up, just do what you need to do. Do what you need to do. All right? But brothers and sisters, stop looking for a supernatural sign from heaven. All right? Because God has ordained your desires, your logic, your discernment, your ability to hear his voice. He has ordained that to show you who the person is. It's a process of discernment, not so much of information, but it's revelation. Revelation always comes in timing. But we're always just looking for information. Is she the one, Lord? If she's the one, Lord, I'm willing, I'm ready to marry her. If you just tell me, is she the one? That's our approach. It's so tiring. Just be discerning. And if she's someone you want to go for, then ask her out. I just want to detour. I know I've gone a lot over time, but I just want to just cover this real quick. Can a woman take initiative? Now, I just want to make a detour to address this issue because it's not very, it's not discussed that much. And in the book, Should I Get Married? Chapter 18, there's a great chapter on this topic. Okay, and this is why I have revolutionized my views on this. Here's the bottom line. Nowhere does Scripture forbid a woman from taking the initiative to begin a serious relationship. Okay, that's going to offend some of you. Okay, that's going to really offend some of you, all right? Our uneasiness with this perspective is not from sound biblical understanding, but rather it's from cultural conditioning. A Christian sociologist, Herbert J. Miles, insists that a single Christian woman has a right to take the initiative by correspondence, telephone, or personal contact to meet and become acquainted with any person she is interested in knowing better. All right? Miles puts it this way. He says there are advantages in women taking the initiative. There are several benefits when women take the initiative. It could mean an end to some long, lonely evenings and weekends. Her initiative will give her a wider selection. It could mean more marriages. Since women tend to look more deeply than just physical attractiveness, they are more likely to find a more compatible mate. Female initiative will tend to produce better marriages. Nature and society have thrust women the responsibility of childbearing and much of the responsibility of the home. Surely the woman should have the right to choose a life companion who will be meaningful to her across the years. There are some men who are just considerably shy. And apart from a woman's initiative, a relationship will never take off the ground. Now, this doesn't mean that all you ladies should go out there and start taking initiative in every man, you know, you're interested. Okay? Unquestionably, there are going to be men who will be offended if you made the first move. So you have to be discerning and prayerful. But if the man whom you wish to get to know is, it just seems shy, very sensitive, shy, quiet, chances are he will greatly appreciate your being straightforward about getting together. If the man is socially comfortable, it may be wise to let him make the first move. You might make casual suggestions like, I really enjoy talking with you. Christian, I really enjoy talking with you. Or just, you know, I am a whole bunch of smiley faces. Every other like line is a smiley face. I don't know what you gotta do, right? I hope I'll get more opportunity to see you. Whatever, you know, casual suggestions may give him all the clues he needs because he's already socially comfortable. He doesn't need that many clues. And if he's not interested, he won't respond. But use your best discretion. Now, this is not a pattern that should continue in this relationship, in the relationship, okay? The man needs to rise up and lead, but women should feel the freedom to take steps of faith. Just because the woman gets the ball rolling does not mean that this is a pattern that's permanent throughout the marriage. Look at Ruth and Boaz. Ruth took a very scandalous initiative to show Boaz that she was interested. John Piper calls it strategic righteousness. So sisters, all right, get yourself some strategic righteousness, all right? And if you're willing to take this teaching, you know, feel the freedom, all right, to help along the issue. Now, just last words. Make a list. Watch their faithfulness in church. Pray. Marriage is wonderful, but if we think marriage is wonderful and that's where you stop, you've missed the whole point of why God even established marriage. See, marriage is designed to display God's covenant of love with us. In Ephesians chapter 5, verse 31 and 32, it says, therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This mystery is profound, and I am saying that it refers to Christ and the church. Paul used that same quote from Genesis to talk about Christ's covenant with the church. In other words, the covenant involved in leaving your parents and holding fast to a spouse and becoming one, it is a portrayal of the covenant between Christ and his church. And all throughout the Old Testament, you'll notice that God uses marriage illustrations as a direct analogy for the unfaithfulness of Israel. Marriage exists to display the covenant-keeping love between Christ and his church. And the thing is, marriage points to this. Because you know what, brothers and sisters? When Christ returns, romance and marriage will be done away with. Surprise! I'm going to be, you know, with you forever. I'm going to love you forever. I don't know what song that was. It was like a mix of Jessica Simpson with someone else. Like, for example, John Piper's father, Bill, he was married to his wife for 36 years. Then she passed. And then he married another woman in his old age for 25 great years. Now, at the resurrection, whose husband is he going to be? Well, that's the answer. Jesus already answered it. He said, no one's. See, marriage is done away with. Marriage is a pointer toward the glory of Christ in the church. But in the resurrection, the pointer vanishes into the perfection of that glory. Marriage is simply pointing to that covenant that Christ has made with the church. And whether you have the gift of marriage or the gift of singleness, let me just end with this. May all of us be single-minded to the glory of God. Amen. Let's pray.